The Little People. Corliss had been sure she had everything tied up neat. She'd known exactly how it'd turn out. Couldn't have known better if she'd seen it with the long eye herself. Then Ricker stabbed Stour in the neck and pushed him off the gatehouse. So now there'd be a battle, then there'd be a sack, and who could say how the hell that'd end? Of a sudden, everyone's life was balanced on the brink, including hers. Hard to see how anything could have been less tied up than this. All around the city, Calder's men were surging towards the walls, thousands of them. Tattered mobs, muddy and messy, with metal glinting in the midst, torn standards snatched by the wind, dozens of ladders among them, their bloodthirsty cries echoing across the valley. Men on the walls bent their bows, sent arrows flickering out into the oncoming crowd. From where she stood, clinging to the pole of Ricker's standard, Corliss saw a couple fall, far too few to make any difference. She'd been sure she had everything tied up neat. Could pick Ricker's every move. Knew she was too soft, too trusting. But there was naught soft about her now. A grin dotted with Stour's blood, that one eye starting from her tattooed face and fixed on Corliss, staring at her and smiling. That bloody knife loose in her hand, and Call shivers, huge and craggy beside her. And Corliss got this bad feeling in her stomach, and not the moon pains. Shafts were flying the other way now, some on fire, dropping in the town, clattering from the slate roofs. Corliss hunched down, not too keen on being arrow-pricked. She thought she could smell smoke, shouting everywhere, panic everywhere, except here on the gatehouse roof, except in Ricker's face. "Your granny gets a lot of visitors," she said.
"What?" "Isern Ifail's a suspicious sort. Maybe that's what happens when you've a madman for a father and no mother but the moon. She took against you right off. So she set some folk to watch your granny and..." "Phew!" Ricker puffed out her cheeks. "They're in and out of her house like it's a brothel."
"Folk come for advice?"
Corliss tried to keep her voice level, no mean feat in the midst of a battle.
"They hold her in high regard."
"Three brothers in particular. They get lots of advice."
"Once a week,"
said Shivers, frowning down at Corliss. With his hair bound back to show the full scale of his scar, he looked a monster, that metal eye flashing as the sun peeped through the clouds. How had she ever got halfway used to it? She couldn't stop her eyes flitting about. Lot of hard faces up on that roof now, and given there was a battle unfolding in the other direction, a lot of them pointed at her. "And they're brewers, you know, these brothers," Ricker was saying. "So they head out on carts all over. There's one place their ale is very much appreciated."
"Cara home," grunted Shivers.
"Hold on, though," Ricker frowned. "Who do I know lives in Currahome? It's someone whose son I just killed. Name's on the tip of my tongue."
"Black Calder?"
Ricker's tattooed face lit up. "That is the bastard!" Corliss's body was tense to run, but there was nowhere to go. They were setting ladders outside the walls. She could see a couple swung up against the parapet, men struggling to shove them back down. Ricker was blathering away like there was no danger at all. "Last time one of those brothers headed up to Currahome, we stopped him before he got there, and the strangest thing, his kegs were all empty."
"Very disappointing," said Shivers. "If you like ale."
"And who doesn't? Must have been some other cargo he was taking up there. He didn't want to say what, but men tell Cole Shivers things they wouldn't tell their own mothers." Ricker clapped him fondly on the arm. "It's that pretty metal eye of his, maybe." Shivers shrugged.
"That, or I just won't stop cutting him."
"Aye, maybe it's that.
Do you know what his cargo was?"
Corliss licked her lips. This wasn't tied up neat at all. This was all coming unravelled.
"How would I know?"
she whispered.
'cause you gave it to him, silly. And Corlith felt herself caught from behind, caught and held, the standard clattering on the stones. She struggled, more of an instinct than any real effort to get free, but one man had her left arm and another her right, and a third caught her around the neck and held a dagger to her throat, and the cold brush of steel against her skin made her go slack as rags. "Secrets," said Rickard, walking closer, the pupil of her long eye yawning huge, the other just a blind pinprick. "That was the cargo. What we're doing up here, how many men there are, who's fallen out with who, what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, or what you think I'm thinking anyway, which might not be quite the same thing. You told Granny, and Granny told the brothers, and the brothers toddled up to Currahome on their fucking empty ale cart and told Black Calder all about it." By the dead, not far away down the wall, some of Calder's men had made it to the top, blades twinkling as they struggled. Couldn't be long now till the city fell. Too long for Corlys, though, maybe. There was no point clinging to the lie. They'd found her out long before.
"Look," she said, voice wobbling. "I can talk to Calder. After the battle's done, make some kind of deal."
"After it's done?" Rickard looked at her like she was the one who'd lost her reason. "Why would I need your help then? After it's done, Calder'll be begging to talk to me." Corlys blinked at her.
"You can't win.
I've heard that before."
"You're way outnumbered. You chased all your friends away."
"Did I?" Rickard tapped the tattoo on her cheek. "Or did I see all this coming, and it's just the way I wanted it?" Corlys had thought she had everything tied up neat. Now it looked like she was the one who'd been tied up all along.
"You're mad," she whispered.
"I've heard that before too, but mad's just a different way of seeing things. Shivers, you reckon it's time for a toot on that horn of yours?" Shivers looked out at the fighting, like Corlith's granny looking at the soup, judging whether it was the right moment to toss in the carrots. "Aye," he said, one loose strand of grey hair flicking around his frown with the wind.
"Rude to keep everyone waiting."
And he raised his horn to his lips and gave a great blast.
"What's happening?" muttered Hardbread, trying to get a look through the trees, but all he could see was more trees.
Distant twinkle of daylight, maybe, between the trunks, through the leaves, but the whole idea was being far enough into the woods they wouldn't be seen, and that meant, pretty much by definition, not seeing much themselves.
"Calder's attacking, I reckon,"
muttered Brandle, chewing at his thumbnail.
"Yes, that. I know that. I can bloody hear it."
A distant clamour of voices echoing lazily from far off, like a fair in the next valley.
"But other than that, I mean."
Damn, he was nervous. Aside from a couple of Calder's scouts they'd captured and another one they'd shot as he rode away, they'd seen no action. It seemed a mad plan. It had seemed a mad plan all along. No way a man sharp as Black Calder would fall for it. But Rickard had just nodded and tapped her cheek in that knowing way and said, "I've seen it." It couldn't be denied that she'd seen her way to her father's bench in Ufrith. It couldn't be denied that she'd seen her way to Scarling's chair in Carlion. That had all seemed mad too. Who knew what was sane anymore? Certainly not Hardbread. And frankly, it would have taken a braver man than him to tell her no. But that didn't mean he wasn't nervous. Stomach churning away. He smothered a burp, rubbed at his breastbone, where the sore fire seemed to burn up his throat. By the dead, if they waited much longer, he'd need to shit again. That'd be just his luck to get the call while he was squatting in the brush, trousers down. "What the fuck's?" And he heard the horn. A long, low, throbbing blast echoing about the valley. Hardbread had been waiting for it for hours, thinking of it for days. He'd dreamed of it in his fitful sleep the night before.
but somehow, when it came, it caught him by total surprise.
By the dead!
He scrambled to his feet, winced at a sharp twinge through his stiff ankle, near fell over, and half swallowed his tongue as he bellowed the order.
That's it!
And he fumbled his sword out and held it high.
Charge!
There was a great rattle, a great clatter, a great cry, as all around him men jumped to their feet and started rushing through the woods. Hardbread hobbled along for a moment. Bloody hell, his knees, his hips, he was creaking like a wooden man from squatting in the cold damp for hours. He had to stop, hold on to Brandel's shoulder while he tried to shake some life into his legs, and men surged past him towards the daylight.
There we go!
And he set to running again. More of a jog, being honest. It was tough through the trees. Broken ground and fallen branches and tree roots ready to trip you. He was wheezing as he burst from the woods and heard the noise, far louder, far closer, far harsher. His eyes were weaker than they once were and had tears in them from the wind of running, and he had to squint into the brightness down towards Carlion. Calder's men, crawling in the fields around the city. Swarms of the bastards. They were at the walls already, ladders up, arrows flitting this way and that.
By the dead,
he muttered. It had seemed a mad plan, but it looked very much as if Calder had fallen for it and fallen hard. The enemy had their asses stuck right out, trapped between Hardbread's men and the walls.
Charge!
He roared, though his voice was weak from the effort, and the wind soon snatched it away, and everyone was charging anyway, men bounding from the trees and into the open, pouring down the hillside. He set off again, Brandel beside him with the standard held high. More of an amble than a run, being honest. It was tough outside the trees, tough on the knees, the uneven ground on the ploughed field jolting him, making his teeth rattle. The sun flashing and flickering at him as the clouds rushed overhead. Couldn't they have found a nice smooth stretch of road to charge down? He tottered to a halt, one hand propped on his thigh and his sword dangling from the other. Damn it, he was blown. There'd been a time he could run for hours. Fastest runner in Ulfrith. Used to be sent running over the fells with messages. Thinking on it, though, that had been 40 years ago.
All right, Chief,
asked Brandel, thumping Hardbread's standard into the turf beside him. You want some water? And he offered out a flask.
Aye.
Hardbread burped, spat, took the flask and a swig and a swallow.
By the dead, but it's a young man's game, this.
What is?
Asked Brandel.
War. What do you think?
Running, maybe?
Aye, well, the two are not unconnected.
Hardbread burped again and was nearly sick, but managed to swallow it.
The old man's job is to get the young bastards in the right place.
He propped his hands on his hips, watched the proud warriors of Ulfrith pouring down the long slope ahead of him towards the city.
And from that point of view, it has to be said, I feel rather pleased with me old self.
He felt the grin spreading across his face. Spent so many years scared of losing, he'd forgot how fine it felt to win.
All right, Brandel. Hoist that standard up, lad. We can't dawdle. There's a battle to fight.
Up you go, you fucker!
Roared Flatstone, slapping one man on the back and sending him up the ladder.
Get up there, you bastard!
Thumping the next man on the shoulder as soon as there were a few rungs free.
Climb, you shit! Climb!
Slapping the next man across his arse. They were getting to the walls way too slow, choked up on the broken ground outside the city, arrows flitting down among them. Had to push on, had to throw them forward.
Go, damn you, go!
And he swung onto the ladder himself and started climbing. The bastards at the top have all the advantages. Fresh and fed and dry and with the height and the parapet, so you've got to swarm them, storm them, fling men at them, care nothing for your losses. But you can't go too fast. Then you'll slip, fall, knock off the men below. You'll run out of puff, so you can't fight if you do get to the top.
and Flatstone's men were mostly sick and all tired. A bastard of a march down from Currahome through the thaw, one of the worst he'd ever seen, and he'd seen some bad ones. He heard a scream as someone fell from the next ladder down. He took no notice, nothing to be done. He fixed on the stones in front of his face, kept 'em moving past. Soon enough he was breathing hard, but it weren't the first time Flatstone climbed a ladder, and he knew his business. Nice and steady, feet on the rungs, one by one, hands on the rails, sliding smoothly, though these ladders hadn't been made too well, and not from the best timber, all a bit rushed, and he was picking up splinters. Still, he'd have worse than splinters if they didn't get up there in numbers. Once you've pushed the first men onto the walls, you owe it to 'em to fling more up there and smash through.
"Go, damn you!"
he roared at no one in particular. The men below, the men above.
"Go!"
More cries. Couldn't stop himself glancing sideways. Saw a ladder tipping back. Saw the man at the top clutching at nothing, eyes wide with horror. Saw another dropping, arms flailing, giving a great breathy squeal. Flatstone stuck to the stones in front of his face, kept climbing, nice and steady. And suddenly he was up, hauled himself over the parapet and dropped down on the other side. Carlion spread out ahead, a hill of crooked streets and grey roofs with Scarling's Hall at the top. He pulled his axe from his belt, swung his shield from his back. Not a moment too soon. Arrows flickered from the windows of a building 20 strides away. One clattered against his shield. Another bounced from a man's helmet just beside him. Another found its mark and someone fell, screaming, barged into someone else, knocked him from the walkway to topple into the town, wriggling in the air. Fires were burning. He could smell it. Smoke smudging the sky. Scratch of it in his throat as he struggled to catch his breath. Burning arrows shot overhead. There were men fighting everywhere. Metal clashed as his carles flooded up the ladders and over the parapet. A grim strain as men struggled to shove back the defenders, shields scraping on shields, boots slipping and sliding in blood, tripping on bodies.
"Yes!"
bellowed Flatstone, pointing north with his axe. Above the writhing men, he could see the gatehouse Stour had fallen from. The gatehouse where that witch must be. They'd captured a good 30 strides of wall, were pushing the defenders back.
"Push on! Drive 'em! Kill 'em!"
There was a thrall sitting against the parapet, dead, no doubt, but Flatstone split his head with his axe. No way he could make it through the press to the fighting, not yet, but it helped to get your weapon red, get your face red, get your hands red, set the tone for what would come later. Kill the...
"Chief!"
someone roared in his ear, plucking at his shoulder.
"Chief! Fucking what?"
Flatstone bellowed, spinning about, and saw straight away what. A great mass of men were pouring down the long slope to the south of town, towards the walls Flatstone and his men had just climbed. A tide of coloured shields and twinkling mail. Reinforcements, come to help him storm the city. He felt a rare smile crack his lips. Then he saw the standards streaming with the wind. Then he recognised them.
"What the..."
He'd fought some of those bastards at Red Hill, seen those signs bobbing on the broken wall of the ruined fort there, where the dogman made his stand. Now, here they were, charging right at his rear.
"Where'd those bastards come from?"
he gasped.
"The south, I reckon."
"I can see that, you fool.
They must have had men hanging back.
You fucking think?"
Flatstone stared wildly about, but now there was trouble ahead as well. Carls spilling from buildings in the town, surging up the steps to bolster the men fighting on the walkways.
"Fuck,"
he whispered. They had to push north, link up with the rest of Calder's men, make a fight of it on the walls and in the fields outside the city. They'd been caught off balance, maybe, but they still had the numbers. He leaned over the parapet.
"Get up here!"
He bellowed at the men on the ladders, at the men at the foot of the ladders, at the men rushing to join them, some of them realizing what was coming up behind and already scattering.
"Push north!"
he roared at the men already up, pointing towards the gatehouse. He thought he could see that witch on the roof, the bright red of her cloak, which meant the tall bastard beside her was Call Shivers, sun glinting an instant on his metal eye.
"The man who brings me that witch's head gets its weight in silver,"
he roared. He'd been thinking about gold, but even at a time like this, you have to get value for money. They were fighting up on the wall. Ignat could see them, peeking around the corner of her house. Something was burning. She could smell it, like burned cakes. She stared with wide eyes, heart thumping. She saw a man kill another up there on the walkway, stab him with a spear. He fell and tumbled onto a roof not far away and slid down, his leg dangling from the thatched eaves.
"Get inside, Ignat!"
screeched her mother, catching her wrist and dragging her in. Hadar flung the door shut, shut it and double-bolted it. Ignat had always thought how strong those bolts looked, how heavy. Now they seemed spindly little sticks of iron to keep all those furious warriors out of the house. She shrank into the corner. She could still hear the fighting. The walls had always looked so huge, but they didn't anymore. Would they come over? Would they get into the town? Would they start beating on the door? She stared at the bolts, her shoulders up around her ears, waiting for them to jump and rattle in the brackets.
"What happens if Rikka wins?"
asked her ma. Hadar just stared.
"What happens if she loses?"
asked her ma. Hadar numbly shook his head.
"What do we do?"
her ma screamed, clutching Hadar by his wrists.
"What can we do?"
he muttered at her. Ignat crawled under the table and put her hands over her head. Outside, deep and throbbing, she heard that horn blow again.
"Come on, come on," muttered the nail, eyes fixed on the crest of the hill, grass thrashing in the wind. "Come on, come on, come on."
He was desperate to go, burning to fight. He could feel the eagerness of the men around him, the men behind him, tensed like drawn bows, straining like dogs at the leash. He could hear the battle joined, the joyous steel and laughter music of it beyond the little rise. He couldn't hold back, and he wriggled up to the crest, up to the waving grass, and peeked over, tongue tip wedged between his bared teeth, down into the valley. Over on the left, Crinner bastards, Bones and Hides men, up at the walls of Carlion. Straight ahead, Black Calder's carles, with ladders to the stones. Over on his right, Hardbred's men had made it down to the city, fighting in the fields, fighting up on the walls, and he couldn't help a little giggle. So Ricker's plan had worked. Seemed a mad plan when she whispered it to him, her eyes in the darkness, the one that saw nothing and the one that saw too much, her breath hot on his face and smelling pleasantly of ale. Seemed a mad plan, but such a bold one he couldn't say no. Never even thought of saying no. Didn't know how he'd ever say no to her. She was honest and wise and beautiful and strange and knew things no one else knew and said things no one else would have dared to and made him laugh when no one else could. He'd never met a woman like her. There weren't any others.
"Come on, come on," he whispered. "Come on."
He'd heard of love, but never thought it was anything for him to worry about. But maybe this was love, this having of a woman always at the back of your mind, this feeling that any time not with her was time wasted, this aching in him to get back into her bed. The memory of her kicking her trousers off, sitting in Scarling's chair with her eyes on him and her legs open, would get him hard at all the wrong times. By the dead, he was getting hard right now, lying on the damp hilltop, looking down at a battle. But this was no day for lovers' thoughts.
This was a red day for red thoughts and red deeds. Ricker needed him, and the Great Leveler would pay a red visit to any man who put himself between them.
Come on, come on, come on, come...
He was up and sprinting before the echoes of Shiver's second blast even faded, flying down the sedge-patched hillside. He'd never been one for war cries. Why tell your enemy where you are? They'll learn soon enough. Surprise, that's the key, whether you're fighting one man or 1,000 or 10,000. The more you're fighting, the more important it becomes, because shock spreads faster than plague, faster than fire, and turns the bravest into cowards. So he rushed up, silent as winter, silent as sickness. He knew the others were with him. His brothers, his cousins, every man he could gather, trekked the long, cold road back from the West Valleys in secret darkness to be here. The baggage was ahead, Calder's soft underbelly, the dirty horses and the mud-caked wagons that held the supplies, the smiths and the cooks, the women and the children who slogged after the men. Killing the fighters was cutting off the fingers, but hitting the baggage was cutting out the guts. And the nail felt the fierce smile spread across his face, the fierce fire burning through his limbs, stronger and stronger with every stride. Might be he loved Ricker, but battle was his oldest love, his first love. That was who he was and who he'd always be. There were a few guards, but most were already running. He could hear their desperate cries tugging him on. Women, too, shrieking and wailing. There was a fighter at the front in bright mail with a bright spear trying to turn his men to form a wobbly shield wall, but they weren't halfway there. Far too late and far too few. The nail ran right for him, faster than ever, wind in his face. He always went at the hardest-looking bastard he could find. Bring down their toughest, break the rest. The nail was on him. Hit his shield with his axe, staggered him with the force of it, chopped with his sword, and it caught the rim, struck a spark, jolted in his hand, a lovely jolt. The breath soared at his chest, ripped up his throat, hissed through his fixed smile, his clenched teeth. He hacked away, drove the man back into a crouch, then caught his leg with his sword and made him howl. Blood spattered. The nail dodged his desperate spear thrust, hooked his wobbling shield down with his axe, stabbed with his sword, stabbed in the open face of his helmet. He fell back, blood pouring from his split mouth. He was trying to say something, but all he could say was blood, and that was eloquence enough in its way. The eloquence of the battlefield.
"Kill 'em all!"
screamed the nail, since there was no need for surprise any longer, just for fury. And he stomped on that warrior's head as he ran on, trampled him into the mud. Others around him, swinging, hacking, shrieking, laughing, dodging between the wagons, springing around the snorting, tramping horses, flowing through the baggage like a red flood, all drunk on battle, all mad on it. He slipped past a cart up on blocks to have its wheel changed, and a mud-covered man came slithering out from under it, sobbing and whimpering. Must have been hiding there, flushed out by someone else.
"Hello," said the nail, already swinging as the man twisted about, wet eyes staring. Caught his neck just right and took his head spinning off, and it clonked against the side of the cart.
Blood sprayed the horse half-harnessed in the traces, and it bucked, kicked out, and set off at a wild, straining canter, dragging the cart jolting after on one wheel, barrels and boxes bouncing from the back, catching a tent and ripping it up, dragging it after, like the train on a bride's dress, torn clothes and dented pots and bent spoons tumbling out and scattered in its wake through the ripped-up grass. Good plunder here, good takings. A tent went up in flames as it fell in a fire, stink of smoke and fear. The nail watched a boy run a few steps off balance, fall, scramble up and totter a few steps, fall again, get up, fall again. Calder's men had been lazy, foolish, weary from their march and fixed on the city ahead. Now they scattered like a flock of crows, and he was the hawk among 'em. The nail hacked someone in an apron in the back with his axe, made him scream, knocked him on his face, one of his boots flying off. Someone smiled as he smashed a man's head against the corner of a cart. He slashed another across the backs of the legs and brought him down, rolling over and over. Someone was bashing a wooden chest open with a hammer, joyful splinters flying. He hacked his axe into the back of a man's head and left him staggering around with a big piece of his skull hanging off, and bounded on with a delighted whoop past some woman sat limp and staring in the grass, shocked tears tracking her blood-streaked face. Someone laughed as they stomped another's face into the mud. He could hear his brothers, his cousins, his men, whooping and hacking and cheering. He dodged a desperate swing of a sword, hacked at the arm that held it, blood flying, hacked again, barged the man out of his way, hacked at him again as he fell, missed, and stumbled on, not caring. The nail clenched his jaw, fixing his eyes on the city. More men ahead and not running so easily, starting to gather into something like a line, facing away from Carlion, facing him. He took a ripping breath and blew out blood, and smiled wider than ever. The easy killing was done. Now came the hard killing.
"Make a line!" roared Trapper.
He'd been heading for the walls, steeling himself for the climb when he'd seen the men sweep down from the south. Now men were pouring into their rear from the west as well. Black Calder had been caught with his fucking trousers down and no mistake, and they all had their asses out with him.
"Make a fucking line!"
he snarled, catching a running man by the shoulder.
"You make a line!"
A fist caught him on the side of the jaw, knocked him stumbling. He couldn't even tell who'd thrown it. He had no more than a score, all of them facing different ways, staring numbly at the chaos. He had to drag them into place. But he hardly knew which way the line should face, towards the city or away.
"What do we do?"
someone whimpered. There were enemies everywhere. Trapper wasn't sure who they were, where they'd come from. That witch Ricker must have witched them up out of hell. They'd laughed at the Long Eye back in Currahome. No one was laughing now.
"Shields, you fucks!"
They stared at him with wet, wide, terrified eyes. A horse charged past, dragging the shattered remains of a wagon. A man gave a great squeal, an arrow in his side. Another was on his knees, clutching, clutching, hands clamped to his bloody face.
"I can't see! I can't see!"
"Shields!"
roared Trapper, not knowing what more he could do than shout. But his men were already running. Even the ones he'd gathered, the little knot flying apart in every direction, tossing down their weapons. Trapper would have run too, if he could have seen anywhere to run to. Men were charging at him, cutting, hacking, driving running figures ahead of them. At the front was a tall, lean bastard with an axe and a sword and a shock of pale hair, his snarling devil's face all dashed with red. By the dead, the nail! That mad bastard was supposed to be miles away. Trapper dropped his shield. There was nowhere to run to. He ran anyway. Scholler had thought they'd be far from the fighting on this little hillock in the eaves of the woods, a nice tump with a big flat rock sunk into the lush green on top, a perfect spot to sit and shave some cheese on a happier day. Here they'd be safe and could get a good view of the carnage and a sound lesson in why battles are things best avoided. She'd watched Calder's men and the Crinner bastards move forwards, set their ladders, start to climb. Then everything had fallen apart. First, what looked like men of Ufrith had come pouring down from the far hills to the south. Then, what looked like men of the West Valleys had swept in from the west, ripping through the baggage, splitting Calder's forces in half. Some of them were pressing in not too far from where Scholler and Flick were standing. There's the trouble with avoiding battles. Sometimes they reach out and find you anyway. Calder's guards had made a ring of shields about the top of the hillock, and on the crest beside the flat stone where Calder's standard was set,
the same sign Bethod used to fight under. The great man himself stood in its shadow, arms grimly folded, watching his army and all his hopes crumble. Clover lurked not far off, in that hunched way of his, like he was trying to fade out of sight. Jolla was glad he was there, though she didn't let it show. She liked Clover. He was a reasonably good chief. He was a reasonably good man. And that was about as good as chiefs and men got in her experience.
"You all right?"
she asked him, her bow in one hand and an arrow in the other, so she could at least look like she might be some help.
"Thus far? You? Apart from all this?"
And she waved the arrow towards the furious fight, not 100 strides off now.
"Where did they come from?" "The West Valleys, I reckon. The Nail and his boys. Seems he didn't fall out with Ricker after all."
Clover rubbed his jaw with something close to admiration.
"Reckon she laid a smart trap and we've all blundered into it. Knew I should have stuck with her."
He put a hand on Sholla's shoulder, leaning close.
"Might be a good move for you and Flick to head into the woods."
There were a lot of other folk heading into the woods, heading as fast as their legs would carry 'em. Most of Clover's boys had already melted away. It was about what their chief would have done after all.
"What about you?"
muttered Sholla. Clover glanced sideways at Calder.
"I've a sense our chief would rather I remained."
"I want to stay,"
said Flick, weighing his sword in his hand.
"No, you don't," said Clover simply. "Here's your last lesson. Winning battles is bad enough. Never hang around to see one lost."
Sholla liked Clover, but nowhere near enough to die for him. She gave him a nod, shrugged her bow over her shoulder, then caught Flick by the shirt and dragged him off towards the trees, arrow still clutched in her sweaty hand. Downside was watching it all, with his teeth angrily bared as they passed, turning the haft of his axe around and around in his hand. Plain he couldn't wait to get stuck into the mess, the mad bastard. Sholla wouldn't miss him.
"When's our moment to be?"
grunted Sen, frowning through the wind-shook greenery towards the battle. Not that you could miss the battle if you had your eyes open. 'Twas a vast battle, 10 battles put together, biggest he ever saw by far, bigger than any his father saw, in spite of all his bloated boasting, which had been one of the man's many failings. His father once claimed he killed 200 men at Yarnvost, and Sen later learned there'd only been 100 with both sides put together. Thinking of his father made him smile. He'd hated that fat bastard, but he'd been quite the laugh in the right mood. Beloved of the moon, he'd been. Beloved of the moon, and laughing with the moon now, no doubt, as they smiled down fondly on the slaughter. His sister Isern did not smile fondly, but then she never did. One of her many failings.
"When the horn next blows," she said, while picking her nose.
"Sure we haven't missed it?"
"Call Shivers knows what to do with a horn,"
and she barked out a cackle.
"Believe me, learned it in Styria," he said.
Sen thought that must be a joke, but he didn't really get it, which, he had to confess, was one of his many failings.
"There's good work being done, and I itch for my part in it."
He held up the hammer and spun it about in his fist, smiling upon the many scars on its heavy head.
"Our father's hammer is hungry."
"It's a bloody hammer,"
said Isern, flicking the results of her nose-picking away among the leaf rot.
"It feels no hunger."
"Well, his axe is hungry, then,"
said Scofen, holding up the axe, no less battle-weathered.
"Likewise, the axe. Might as well say his spear's sleepy."
And Isern gave it a shake.
"Load of nonsense. They're wood and metal and have no feelings."
"But I want to get at these painted bastards,"
snarled Scofen, rubbing impatiently at the tattoos on his face. To start on his failings would have kept the lot of them busy all day.
You'll get your chance, said Isern. And there was the horn, throbbing through the roots of the trees and giving Sen a tickle in his toes.
There it is, called Skofen. It's time!
Sen grinned wide at his sister.
Da would have fucking loved this.
Like I care what that bastard loved. She leapt atop a rock, holding high their father's spear, her skirts bound right up and the knotty sinews bulging from her bare legs.
Let's give these crinner sheepfuckers a fucking they'll not forget.
With those rousing words still ringing, she sprang away and off they tumbled after, bursting from the trees and down the slope towards the grey city, the good wind rushing about them and their war songs echoing around the valley.
For the moon, someone wailed. For the hills,
someone else.
For Crummock if fail,
roared Sen. At his back were any of the hill folk who'd fancied a battle, which of course was pretty much the full tally, scoured from every cranny in the mountains. They'd been offered a chance to fight, which they loved, and to fight Black Calder, who they hated almost as much as they'd hated Bethod. And also Rickor had offered two rich valleys to those who fought, and though some might think the hillmen lived simple lives, in truth they were as greedy as anyone, if not a little more so. The crinner bastards were spread out ahead in a spiked and painted line. Horrible savages they were, all pierced and puckered and covered in bloody bones. They'd seen what had happened to their friends, had time to shift away from the city, wheel to face the Nail and his boys as they poured down from the west. But they had no idea Crummock Ifail's children were coming on them from the north, and the ones at the near end spun about white-eyed, scattered, wailing and head-clutching as the hillmen crashed into them. Sen saw Isern spit one through the face, saw Skofen hack another's chest open with their father's axe, his red insides popping out. There was a silly bastard with a silly helmet made from jawbones, and Sen dropped his father's hammer on it like a falling boulder and crushed his head into his shoulders in a great fountain of blood. Smashing left and right he was, and roaring, and spinning the hammer, and sending men screaming and reeling and flying. He was a bloody whirlwind, like his father at his best, or his worst. Beloved of the moon he was, and smiled upon by chances. He thought someone might have cut him, but it didn't seem to make much difference. He was still swinging the hammer, so he reckoned he'd live, and if he didn't, well, here was a death the moon would smile upon. A tall one was pointing, screeching at his men in a jagged tongue, but Isern bounded up on a wagon in a shower of bones and sprang down on him, spear darting out and taking him in the breastbone, and he sprayed blood from his mouth and fell on his knees, and Skofen split his head in half with their father's axe. They might have competed over which of them hated their da more, but for better or worse, he'd given them this, made them ready for this, brought them to the moon's notice. A crinner bastard covered in bones came gibbering at him, and Sen roared and swung, and the hammer caught him in the side with all its weight, brushed him away like cobwebs, shattered the bones in him and the bones on him, and flung him spinning in a shower of red specks and white splinters. A great maddened dog ran past with an arrow in its side. Another came at Sen, but Skofen caught it in the belly with a great sweep of his axe and sent it tumbling away to roll and mule and wriggle. There was death smeared all over, and the good grass watered with good blood, and the moon could not but smile on this day's work. Rickor of the Long Eye in particular, who'd looked but a pale and stringy streak when she was carried into the hills, but had seen this come, made this come, laid out the good gifts so they could all take their fill. Sen laughed as he kicked a limping savage in the back and smashed his arse in with the hammer, smashed his head in as he crawled, swung for another as he ran and missed and stumbled around in a circle and was nearly dragged right over. It was a fearsome weapon, the hammer, but heavy as mountains. He rather wished he'd got the spear now,
Then maybe he could have flitted about the battlefield like his sister, darting in and out like a toad's tongue. Mind you, he hadn't the belly for that slippery business, nor honestly the wits, nor honestly the puff. He set the hammer head down and leaned on it, catching his breath, watching Skofen hack at the dead, and Isern stand on a man's back and stab him through the throat, and the rest of the hillmen stream into the back of the Krinner bastards and send them scattering like starlings. Made him proud to see the hill folk fighting as one. Hadn't happened in many a long year. Not since the battle in the high places, maybe, where the Bloody Nine had killed his brother Rond. Thanks to his father's endless appetite for wives, though, he had brothers and sisters in plenty, so not too much lost. It's a poor life ploughed that hasn't left a few dead siblings in its furrow. The weak are winnowed out to leave the strong. The chaff is taken by the wind, so the seed beloved of the moon can flourish. He frowned over at a set of great pots, man high, fires banked underneath them, steam pouring from inside.
"What the bloody hell are the pots for?" asked Sen. "Soup or something?"
"They're for rendering down the corpses, do you see?"
Isern frowned at her spear's bloody head.
"So they can get at the bones."
Sen shook his head in disbelief.
"What a pack of arseholes."
Rance held his axe tight and tried to work up the anger. They'd come to burn his city, hadn't they? Come to kill his people. Time to be a man. At a fourth blast from Shiver's horn, ear-splitting from being so close, two big carles hefted the bar from its brackets, and two others shoved the doors wide, and they sallied from the gates of Carlion and out into the fields in front. By the dead, the noise! At the last moment, Rance's feet seemed stuck to the cobbles, but he was carried along anyway, among the warriors spilling from the city like a cork in a flood. Calder's men weren't ready, panicked by the attacks from behind, now panicked by an attack from in front. They wavered, spears wobbling, but Rance didn't fancy running at them, didn't fancy it at all. It came to him, of a sudden, how hard and unforgiving is a spearhead, and how soft and easily torn is a man's belly. He stumbled from the flow of howling, screaming, charging men. He flinched as someone toppled from the walls a few strides away, a ladder flung down in ruin on top of him. The world smelled of blood and smoke, bodies everywhere, wounded, crawling, moaning, clutching. His uncle had warned him it was no business for a boy at 12. Now he saw it wasn't only man's work, but madman's work. Someone barged him from behind and he nearly fell, tangled in his uncle's old oversized mail. He nearly tripped over a corpse. A young man, his helmet fallen off to show blonde hair matted with blood, one eye open, staring at nothing much. He saw Call Shivers cutting his way through the enemy, grey sword going up and whipping down with such terrible speed, with such horrible force. And it came to him how razor-sharp and ruthless is a sword blade, and how fragile a man's skull. Calder's men were falling back, falling apart. Hardly seemed like he was needed, really. Most likely there'd be time to be a man later. He slipped along the wall and back through the gate, into the shadows.
"Run!"
roared Stand of the Barrows, and he broke for the trees and Skunlik loped along after. A great fighter must not only know when to fight, but when not to, and Skunlik was as proud of the few bad fights they'd got away from as the many good ones they'd won. This was a bad one. Very bad. The worst. The hillmen chased after them away, but fell to picking over the dead for trinkets and were left behind. They sent arrows flitting after, whistling farewells, twittering into the greenwood, clicking into the trunks with their feathers fluttering. Stand of the Barrows kept up a fast pace on his long shanks, and the sound of battle soon faded. They stopped to catch their breath and listen. Grommer had an arrow in his back and sat down beside a tree, wheezing red and did not get up.
"We were fools to trust in Black Calder," shouted Yort. "The cunning of cunning men always runs out, and usually at the worst moment. I said so back in—"
Stand of the Barrows caught him around the neck and bore him down onto the ground and squatted over him, throttling him, beating his skull against a tree root until the blood flowed, then catching his head and twisting it right around until his neck came apart with a thick crunching.
"That was well done," said Skunlik.
"Aye," he said, standing up. "I wish I could take his bones."
And the others grunted their agreement. It was a worthy thought. Then Stand of the Barrows ran on, his axe in his hand, and Skunlik ran on with him. But it seemed the further they went into the wood, and the darker and dimmer and greener it grew, the fewer of them were left. There was a chill among the trees, a damp chill, and a mist clinging to the scrub, so the twigs came lashing from nowhere, and the brambles clutched out from the grey to snag foot and ankle and bring men down squealing in the undergrowth.
"Whence comes this mist?" hissed Stand of the Barrows, creeping forward slowly.
And it was true. It seemed a thing alive, twisting between the black trunks, sticking to men in tatters. They blundered into a clearing, Skunlik stumbling forwards with his hands stretched out like a blind man searching. A stunted tree loomed from the murk, or no, a stump, and on the stump, a figure. An old woman, bent, but something gleamed on her forehead as she looked up, and Skunlik tottered back amazed, for he saw that her face was split by a great scar, and the two halves were stitched together with golden wire.
"A devil," he whispered. "A devil."
The bone pickers had gathered into a knot, no more than a dozen left, where there'd been hundreds, thousands. Now they crowded close about Stand of the Barrows, back to back, drawing strength from his strength.
"Did you make this mist?" he snarled at the woman.
"I did," she said, "and reckon it a good one."
And though she was old, her voice was young, as beautiful to listen to as she was dreadful to look upon.
"I do not, witch."
Stand of the Barrows took a step forwards, feet falling heavy in the silence.
"Remove it."
"As you wish."
Like water from a broken bowl, the mist drained from the clearing, but Skunlik felt no joy at its passing. He saw figures among the trees at its edge, ghosts at first, all around, but turning more horribly real with every moment, and Skunlik found he was wishing that the mist would come again.
"Gods,"
he whispered, his blood turning cold. They were twisted things. Unholy things, things of flesh and metal, of tusks and teeth and rivets, of rusted plates and crisscrossed scars, things with flattened heads and bent limbs, cut apart and stitched together. Clutched in their claws, they had cruel spears, cruel bows, cruel knives and axes and daggers.
"These I made too,"
sang the witch, stroking the hairless head of one of them. They slipped forwards, a tightening ring, dozens of them, hundreds, eyes gleaming in the gloom of the greenwood.
"What do you want?"
And Skunlik heard a thing he had never heard before in the voice of Stand of the Barrows, and had never thought to hear, the quaver of fear. The witch smiled, skin twisting and puckering around the golden stitches.
"Your bones," she said.